Ellie, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. I'm going to need a sub.
I wish I could cover you, but as you're about to find out, the process for me to sub in your classroom in another state is a wild journey. So if you're about to listen to this podcast, buckle up. Just, it's all I got for you.
Welcome to Disrupt Education, the podcast. Thank you guys for coming back, everybody, for hanging out with us. Yeah, this is the substitute episode. So in a previous episode, we were talking and Allie let it slip that she's going back into the classroom as a sub. So we're like, we have to make this an episode. So here we are. And at the recording of this, you did this the day prior.
Yes. Well, there's a whole setup coming,
but there was prior.
Yeah, there's the prior to prior. But yesterday I subbed after getting everything checked off to be able to sub. So it's very fresh. Basically the process is fresh right now, which is why we're recording it right now.
Right.
So you're getting it hot off the press, the whole thing.
Let me ask you a very quick question. Is it easier to get a passport than it is to substitute teach?
Yep.
There you go. There you go, folks. You want to know why there's a sub shortage?
Yes, it was actually easier to skydive internationally with a pretty minor license and no gear and walk into a place I didn't speak the language and jump out of a plane, which seems way more dangerous and, like, you know, potentially, I don't know, safety issues.
Sure.
Than it is to substitute teach. So yeah, this, we talk about the teacher shortage. It's a big headlining issue, right? I just read a headline today about the teacher shortage affecting a school district in Texas that is basically combining classes and then projecting courses virtually in a cafeteria where they're putting hundreds of kids in one place for a class in order to meet the demands of the classes they need to teach, or they can't fill a position.
Right.
And
that sounds fun. Not at all.
There are companies that are stepping in
to
fill those gaps. And I'm even learning about, living in a rural area, some of those same types of gap fills happening now in a very direct manner.
Yeah.
That this was not the case when we were in school. And if you do teach in a bigger metropolitan area, a well-funded school district, you're likely still not seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
Though the presses, I know at the school district that I left, there was custodian shortages, bus driver shortages, para professional shortages, secretary shortages, and then sub shortages.
Yeah. There's, and I will just kind of bounce off that before we dive into your application process. I just said that very, like, narcissistic, but I have to, because I know this is going to be a good one. But there are bigger districts around here, and I'm in the Chicagoland area, and wealthy districts as well, that are struggling because busing companies just cannot meet the demand. And I know that our district, we have three high schools, and we went with three different busing companies to help solve some of those issues. It's worked a little bit better, but one of the places, the school districts next to me, is now having major problems with busing kids to school. And this is a high school district. So, you know, I think we need to get a little bit innovative here, but let's dig into the dirt of Allie becoming a substitute teacher, which, by the way, she's already licensed to be a teacher. And is that just in Missouri, or is that other places as well?
Yeah, so that's a great place to start, because people may not be aware, in many industries, getting a certification in a state is transferable. It's easily switched, or there's some reciprocity there. In teaching, that is, for the most part, not the case. So I have a lifetime teacher certificate in Missouri, which took me, you know, bachelor's degree, master's degree, student teaching year-long experience, then 5 years of teaching experience to then even qualify for that certification and that certificate, which I've held.
Let me ask you this, though. So do you have to go back to get more like classes or anything to keep your license updated, or is it just done?
So you know, nothing for my teacher's certificate in Missouri, which that is unique.
Yeah.
That is unique to Missouri. However, the way the state keeps professional development and continuing education is that in order to increase in salary or move up a pay scale, you have to have certain professional development credit hours every 3 years. So there is still that, but it's it's a state mandate unrelated to your license. That is how it's done in Missouri.
That's state mandated and not locally mandated.
Based on my understanding, yes. That's because both all the school districts that I know have like, it's called like a 3-3.
Okay.
And I think that is in lieu of the renewing of, because most states have, just for comparison's sake, one, like sometimes you have like a 1 year teaching certificate, and that you have to renew every year. Some states have like 2 and 3 years, some states have every 5 years, some states have 10-year ones, and there probably are other variations. Those are the most common.
So
usually 3 and 5 are like the most common, and you have to reapply for your teacher license every 3 and 5 years in a lot of states.
Ours is every five in Illinois.
And you have to meet certain requirements. So again, but this, you might not be aware of this as a listener of the podcast, of even like the certification process, and substitute teachers have those types of requirements as well. There are substitute teacher licenses that are often below the requirements of a full teacher, but that are still, you basically still have to do everything that would be a teacher, except that you're not a teacher.
Right. It's a
lot. It's a lot.
When I started, it actually, I started in Indiana, and this is how it was in Indiana. I believe you had to have either 1 or 2 years of college, and that was it. Like, that was it. But I don't know if that's changed in Indiana, but what's the case where you are?
So Wisconsin does not have that. There are a pretty, I would say Minnesota and Wisconsin, both of those states have, I would say, high requirements for substitute and even teaching licensure. So all that set up to
take us on a journey. Let's go.
Okay. So I also want to, I want to paint the picture. I had to write down everything because I was like, not going to remember. I like was like, what all did I have to do? So I want to preface this with, so that people are aware, like, not only do I have that lifetime certificate in a state that I had to work a very long time to get, 5 years, okay, plus all that other stuff. In order to get that, I also had to take a content exam. And some states also have like a pedagogy exam, which is something in Minnesota you have to do. But I have 10 years teaching experience. I have a master's. I have then 30 graduate level credits, just basically underneath a PhD level amount of education. I just didn't write a dissertation. Okay. So like, I'm a highly qualified individual to teach 9 through 12 unified science, emphasis on chemistry. I want to just paint that for people so that they're aware that like, all of my background is related to be able to teach high school science with specifically chemistry. Okay. So when I was applying for a new license, because they do not transfer, I had to, have a background check. All right. Fingerprinting. I had to have, I had to apply for the Wisconsin Department of Instruction, their application, where they had to verify my employment, which required paperwork. Mm-hmm. Okay. They had to verify my degree, which required me contacting my graduate school. They needed every transcript from every college I ever attended. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I had to go back and like, I took some classes at like a local community college, just took two. They needed that. I had took a class at another college to then add to a degree program to elevate something. So I would take it during the summer rather than during the fall and winter, spring. They needed that. Right.
How much did that cost, by the way? You know, they had to pay for some of those transcripts.
Yeah, all of this has cost in not only my time, but money to get these transcripts. Mm-hmm. Right. I then had to pay for the licensure. It's not cheap. You can look up prices for how much these things cost online. Oh, I had to pay. The background I'd have to pay for fingerprints. I did. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wow. They made you pay for the fingerprinting.
Yes.
Wow. I've had to do that. I've never had to pay for it though. Interesting.
Yep. Very I know. Yep. Yeah. And it was I live in a rural area. So I had to drive 45 minutes one direction. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and these are all costs that I should also add, I'm not doing this because I need to.
This was supposed to be fun, Allie.
I love an adventure. I love a challenge. This is just, I'm trying to give back to the community in which I live in. That was the whole goal of this. I'm a highly qualified teacher. I see a need. I can help. I was like, great.
You're still not done applying though. What else you got to do?
Okay. I needed three letters of recommendation.
Okay.
I needed three character references that were different from the letters of recommendation. I had to do a 3-hour sub training.
How much that cost?
I didn't have to pay for. I had to have tuberculosis testing, which was two trips. For people who aren't aware, if you've never had to do this.
They still do the arm thing where they do the little arm thing. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So it's like you go in, you get injected with something that
who knows.
I do know. I'm just not going to go into all the science behind it. But to get injected in the arm, and then like you hope that you don't have any bumps or anything. But if you do, you might not even. It could be a false negative, and then you have to get like a chest X-ray. I did not have to do that. But I'm trying to paint a picture for people that this is something that could happen. Mm-hmm. Still not done yet.
I know. Okay. That's why this is the greatest episode ever.
It's wild. Yeah. So then I had to do online trainings, which this is normal for teachers. You may not know this. Every year there are online trainings, which are an exorbitant amount and they continue to grow. The ones that are required for, there are state required ones, and there are local ones. So the state requires intruder training, so that you know how to protect yourself if somebody comes into the school with guns or other bombs, weapons. It's great training.
Right.
Harassment. That's, you know, mandated. You're a mandated reporter. Children are a protected population. Then there are like local ones related to bloodborne pathogens.
Pathogens. Every educator right now who's listening to this is cringed. That's what we always used to make fun of, the bloodborne pathogens.
It is. And then there's like, you know, the local school policy ones that you, which was a part of like the 3-hour sub training, which includes just a lot of information about, you know, FERPA and, you know, just other ways that we protect student information and like their health. And, you know
just more than the president at this moment. Well, you're supposed to.
This is why I had to write all this down, because I was like, there was so much. And then, so now this wasn't required, but they offered a sub shadowing experience, which you did get paid for. But I actually I thought that was a good thing, but it just goes to show the entire process. So at the beginning of the school year, oftentimes schools, if they're lucky, have in building subs. It actually costs the district less, and then they have someone on site every day that they can kind of slot in where they need them. And at the beginning of the year, most teachers aren't sick, they aren't taking personal days, and so they don't have as much to do. So the school districts around here, they're like, hey, we offer a sub shadow. You can come in and basically tour the building, learn about how protocols are, see, you know, how to work the online computer systems or attendance. I live in Wisconsin, which is the dairy state. So there is daily milk. You have to do a milk count.
Nice. Nice. I'm assuming this is primary.
And middle school has a milk count.
All right.
I mean,
I guess milk. I remember we used to, maybe not so much middle school, but I remember milk in the afternoon. That's old school.
I know. I have never heard of a milk count as an educator.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I remember there being milk.
Yeah.
But teaching in Missouri, that's not a thing.
Yeah. Makes sense in Wisconsin. Okay. Yeah.
So that is the setup for subbing. And
can you use this at more than one school though while you're done?
So, okay, I guess I should round this out with.
Right.
So, technically, you have to get your licensure. Most of those things were under in order to get your license. Some of those things are like, you know, then to specific to the school district.
Mm-hmm.
You then have to submit that application, and then you need that before you can technically sub. Guess what the wait time is on it?
We're talking government here, right? I don't know. 30 days?
10 to 12 weeks.
Like, all right.
Which would put me in 2024, which maybe when this episode comes out.
Right.
Wow. Districts, especially rural ones, have gotten like kind of a waiver that basically if you have submitted it and they can see it, so they can basically see everything that you submitted, and they can basically be like, yeah, this person is qualified.
Sure.
But they just haven't gotten like the stamp of approval from the government.
Right.
They are operating in a gray area though.
Sure.
And school districts have to operate in a lot of gray area, which is like this whole liability issue. All of this red tape, like we talk about the red tape, we're trying to uncover it. And I mean, did I think when I was trying to quote unquote give back to the community, I was going to uncover a bunch of red tape of how to like get involved in your local school community? No.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one version of how arduous it is for people to work and then be in the schools. And this is not like I am going to be grossing some large amount of money doing this. And it's work.
Yeah.
It's actual, like, subbing is work. Teaching is work. Being in a school building is work. You are, like, on the entire time. This is not some, like, desk job where you can go at your own pace and just relax and kick it back, take coffee breaks, sit at the water cooler, gossip, maybe work for an hour, take an hour. Like, that is not, like, even what you're signing up for.
Why do you think it is the way it is? Like, why do you think it, how did it get here? What do you think?
I would love to know all of the things that had to have gone wrong, because what this tells me is that there were so many people violating the system or wrecking, like taking advantage of the system to what should be a protected population. Like, I get it. They're students. We don't want just anybody coming into the schools and working with them.
Sure.
But there has to be a more streamlined way. Not to mention the biggest critique I have of this whole thing is that I have been a licensed teacher for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of transferability.
Yeah.
And needing everything is what is difficult and challenging for me to understand, because when I went skydiving in Italy last year, I had the effective of a student teaching license. Like, I mean, basically I had 60 jumps.
Right.
That's nothing in the skydiving world. I know for people listening who are like, I can't ever jump out of a plane. Right. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. You did it 60 times and then went jump to Italy.
Like you flew a plane for 60 hours. It's not that much.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's really not. And I was able to, with very little, you know, time in the sport relatively, with a language barrier, totally different drop zone setup, safety, security, cloud clearances. There's, and I was able to do it with basically no training, and they just let me borrow their gear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, I they accepted that license. Like, right. I'm just trying to like, I don't know if it's the best analogy, but it is wild to me, the level of difference that there was basically no belief that I had any experience in the field that I've been in for my entire adult career.
And then, you know, on top of that, right? So, you know, that's something that you're doing for, I don't want to say entertainment, but like, it's kind of like, it's hobby, but I know you're building into a job there, but for that, but for work, right? And what you just mentioned, if you didn't listen to that, go all the way back and listen to it again. But now you have to think about how organized a person has to be, and then to have the time, the money, and, you know, the wherewithal to do all this 12 weeks before you walk into a classroom, if you're going to do it without the gray area. And then the cost alone, like if you had to calculate, and I know you probably haven't done this, but your time, mileage, wear and tear on your car, and then basically the cost of all the things that you had to get. Cause I know when I do anything, like when you go somewhere else, like, you know, I had to get my transcripts again, like, and those schools are not given to you for free, official ones anyway. You know, there's different things. It was funny. I was drug tested for this job that I have, but never drug tested, like not annually or anything. So like, you know, I could have been off the sauce for a little while and then just, you know, but obviously I'm not, but like thinking about those things, like, so we're like, we are, if you have a number, could you put a number on it? Would it be in the thousands?
Yes, it would be
easily. It right. And then, so if you estimate how many days you'd actually have to sub to break even on that, right? It's no wonder they're having problems finding people.
Right. I mean, I had the time and space to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that time is spent, right? It's already done.
It's over.
I haven't recouped the actual physical dollars that I had to shell out in order to apply and everything yet, because I've only subbed like 2 days,
right?
Like very minimally at this point. It's the beginning of the school year at the recording of this, right? Like, we don't know when this episode is coming out, because we're going to drop it when it's the right time.
Yeah. Which will be in 10 to 12 weeks. No, I'm just
12 weeks, probably.
So, let's go into the sub job itself, right? Like, so, were they both in primary? What grade levels were you at?
So I subbed on the first day of school at the high school level.
Hello, teacher. What? Yeah. Extending the break. What's that all about? That's the stuff that gives us a bad name. Don't do that.
No, it was an emergency situation.
Maybe there is a family emergency or something. Okay. So I'll give them that, but that's, you know, everybody's going to look kind of weird when you come in day two. FYI.
So. I know. It was honestly, that one was just really brought back some flashbacks. Cause that is my arena, right? Yeah. So I didn't feel like super out of place there. It was your basic rundown of school policies, which it's not a very exciting day. Some teachers like to mix it up, and I didn't like doing that day. So I would always do a fun demo, light stuff on fire.
100%.
Because it would be way more memorable. Mm-hmm. But it was the just read out of the student handbook and, you know, talk about dress code and how do we eat in the cafeteria? What time will you miss your bus? Like, I would try and like give them, I was trying to give them some like real world examples. I was like, look, if you miss the bus in real life, you're missing your, you're missing right. life. Like, right. Like you have to like get your stuff and be on time. And I, you know, they were freshmen for the most part. So sure. it was like their first day of high school. That is a grade that I taught. So it was very transferable. I felt super comfortable. Right. The teacher did not have their room set up though. I was like, this is odd.
Yeah. Might've been still in the Bahamas. You never know. You never know.
I don't know. A lot of people were super helpful. Sure. The technology of course did not work.
Never, never does on day one, by the way, for those who don't know, never works. Links, sometimes day two.
The links that the principal sent out were going to the wrong thing.
Right.
I don't have access to the document that I need because I'm not on that email list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just, fun day. A lot of conversation. Probably. I can imagine these kids like coming back day two and they're like, where's that for real teacher at? Where did she go?
But here's the flashback part. So I taught in St. Louis, Missouri, which is a pretty warm, humid place. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It regularly at the beginning of the school year, we're talking 100 degree days. Now, schools have air conditioning in Missouri because it's hot there and it's expected to be hot there through October. Okay. And regularly the AC would be on until at least middle to end of September, if not sometimes into October. That's not abnormal for St. Louis, Missouri. And where I taught, for whatever reason, regularly the first week of school, the AC would not work or wouldn't be on full power. So I have had many years where teaching in a classroom that was 75 to 85 degrees. So you are just overheated. The kids are overheated. And
more bodies, you know, more heat. Yeah, 100%. Then miserable. You have devices. Yeah.
Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, does not typically hit those temperatures. And so most schools do not have air conditioning. Not to mention, they also start school later, like after Labor Day. Missouri starts school mid-August.
What we do in Illinois. Yeah.
So it was 95 degrees. Very atypical. And the school didn't have air conditioning. So it's really hot.
So you're a sub. You go through all this stuff. And then this is what happens. I'm giving the empathetic look at this, right? You have to actually walk through the shoes of somebody who is really trying to give back, which you're doing. Thank you so much for sharing this, because then we start, this is like design thinking, right? Like this is UX design in the classroom. We really need to, this is disrupting education. Walk through it, walk through it. So for those administrators out there, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's all these different mandates and different things like that, or teachers, but you just kind of have to laugh at some of the crazy stuff. So your second school was an elementary school, yeah?
It was kindergarten.
Yeah, wow. So first in school and then first in high school.
So it was a split day. It was actually in the morning kindergarten, in the afternoon third grade, but okay. I was way more nervous about.
Again, by the way, just want to stop you there for a moment. You have to be flexible. Your mindset's got to change, especially in elementary, because you might be teaching 10-year-olds to 5-year-olds, or in high school, you might be picking up like an AP course and go into like a general course. And then, oh, by the way, you're checking out the in-school suspension room this period, right? So, okay, God, yes. Sorry.
No, but this is like, it helps people who aren't in the day-to-day school grind, whether you're working with schools or you're a parent or you're an administrator, you're in higher ed. Like if you sit at the high school level, you might not understand the elementary level. Mm-hmm. Like this is hopefully illuminating just the variety. I mean, like I'm learning a lot of things and going through it, you know, with recency, it's just showcasing like why it can be difficult to disrupt education and overcome these traditional models, because the work that has to be done, even to just entrench yourself in the current operating system, is so long. And I know we are going to be talking to people, and I don't know if it will come out before or after this episode.
Yeah.
Of like, we talk about the red tape, removing the red tape, and we have been trying to find people who can talk us through that and learn about it. And it's super interesting because, like, this is its own version of red tape that, right. You know, somebody listening may have the power to remove some of these roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, you just, if you aren't in the schools, if you aren't in the trenches, you really can't understand like how tiring it is to be in the system, let alone make changes within or outside in any of those. So we commend the guests that, and school districts and organizations that do that work, because it is long, hard work to do that and to make changes. And we've had guests on that, like, look, if you're going to make change, you have to embrace conflict. You have to have patience. You have to have empathy. You have to, these are things you have to expect. And, you know, yeah, that is the case. If you want to even just give back in the community, you're going to need patience. You're going to, like, you will be able to, but this is not some, like, you walk in and you are like, hey, I want to help in the school. And they're like, sure, we're going to put you in, you know, like immediately. It's not right. The case.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're trying to showcase.
No, I was just going to, you know, kind of think about, like, you know, in the end of the day, right? Like, you know, you understand there is a balance of safety versus, like, you know, really good, you know, people who can really just make learning a lot different, a lot more innovative, right? And this is just one piece of that. And this is what I wanted to tell the listeners, like, you know, there is that balance. We're not saying, yo, let's just let anybody off the street here. However, I think we're missing tons and tons of opportunities for outside individuals to come into a school district and really kind of give kids a different lens, whether they have to go through a certain, you know, whatever, a teacher left or something like that. But those conversations and different things that we can get people, it should be like a library, really, like where things are flowing in and out. A lot of knowledge are flowing in and out. And, you know, I think it's super important that people understand, right? It's like, well, why are nobody subbing? Well, the school must suck, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's not what we're saying at all. It really is difficult to do these things, right? It is unbelievably difficult. And I think we need to have, like, different ways of looking at this. And for me, like, you know, I'm like, give this to a project management class in high school and let the kids actually innovate. Like, let them go. Let's see what they come up with to get a substitute teacher in, and then have them, like, kind of conversate. You can add government in there. Obviously English and writing is in there. History, it's all there. You just project-based learning. Here we go. Hello, Kyle Wagner out there. You know, my buddy Kyle does some stuff across the world. You know, these types of things is really kind of what I wanted to say. So,
I mean, having students and those in the system help solve the problem, you know, built into the educational model sounds incredible. And, you know, it's interesting, the experience I had in kindergarten, because I was like, it's not my area of expertise. Like, I feel, you know, like, what am I going to offer these kids? Or, you know, that, what do they even do? Like, how do you manage them? I will say, you know, all this is, I have worked in a K-2 after school program, and I loved it. It was an amazing nonprofit for kids who are behind, but it had still been like 10 years since I had done that type of work. And it's just not my arena for the most part. And I was like, I'm going to have to sing songs. Like, that's what I was told. Like, you know, they sing like the days of the week, and, you know, they read these books and you have to like act out the characters. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just, I'm a high school science teacher, super analytical. Like I can be goofy and whatnot, but it's just, I was nervous. And these kids, man, I will tell you, I would go through everything that I just listed to be around the energy that kindergartners have.
Yeah.
It's incredible. They, now it's the beginning of the school year. We are 100% in the honeymoon period, but I have found that elementary kids for the most part love school.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have been, you know, like their whole life, you know, it's like growing up, like, oh, you get to go to school next year, or you get to go to school in a little bit, or like they have an older brother or sibling who goes off to school and then they feel left out. And so then when they go to school, like there is a lot of general positive feelings for children at this age with school and learning. Because I kid you not, I'm literally pulling and I'm like, it's reading time. Get on the carpet, because this is where they sit. And it's this ABC book about animals at night acting. Such a strange book. But it's like alligators can, oh man, I should remember what the A was, but it was like, it was like dinosaurs can dance. Okay. Yeah, or,
right. Yeah, these, they always have to have.
Yeah. Right. It's all about that alliteration. And it was, oh, hippopotamus can hop.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, I'm reading this book and then I'm like, okay, like let's count like how many hops is the hippopotamus doing and what color is the hippopotamus, you know, because that they're learning their colors and letters and numbers and stuff. And then I'm like, can you show me how a hippopotamus hops? And then I'm like, how far can you hop? These kids literally like bound off the floor and they're just hopping around and they're like, teacher, like they want to tell you the answer. They're like, you know, their math time is like coloring these colors by numbers because they don't necessarily know their numbers. They don't know their uppercase letters from their lowercase letters. Some of them don't know how to spell their name. You're like, wow, this is where we start.
Yeah. Underneath it all, though, you know, you're saying as a science teacher, I don't think hippopotamuses can really hop. You're lying to these kids.
There was a lot of things in that book that were not correct in terms of what animals could do. But
you
we
see them, they come, their teacher comes back the next day. Miss Privet said this book is lies.
I did not. The one that I was really challenged by was iguanas can imagine. And it was this picture of an iguana imagining like bugs. And so I was asking the kids, I was like, what is the iguana imagining?
Right.
So one kid was like, they're trying to think of their friends they can play with.
You are right, Billy.
This other girl goes, no, iguanas eat bugs. Kids are.
The curiosity has got to be amazing at that level.
Yeah. It is. I mean, they had these centers where they were doing stuff, right? Okay. And this teacher, like, it was like an hour and a half for this activity. And I was like, no way does this take an hour and a half. I was like, absolutely not. These kids are going to finish this in 10 minutes. I was like, maybe a half hour if they're really slow. Kindergartners take a long time to do things.
Yeah.
But I want to emphasize, though, like going back to like the start of school, like this is the first time these kids have, maybe they went to pre-K, but like school is starting. There is curriculum. There are tests. That was why I had to sub so early in the school year, was because the teachers had to pull kids to do testing. So they can't sub when they're doing that.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of a, you know, a unique subbing role because the teacher was in and out. They really weren't there, but it was kind of nice for the kids because it can kind of lean them into like, oh, if the teacher isn't there, having someone else help out in the classroom is no big deal. But that energy of like, this is someone at 5 years old who is experiencing the educational system without burdens, without any preconceived notions. Everything is new and exciting. If you have not been around that energy in a while, it will wake you up. And that was the biggest, like all the nervousness and everything, all the paperwork I had to go through, was worth it to experience that. And I would, if you are listening and can get in a school, right, to be around that kind of energy, like the elementary school, I know why I enjoyed doing it 10 years ago, because it's magical to learn and see a kid before your eyes. One day they can't read and write. The next day they can read and write. I mean, there's nothing more magical than that. Like, I mean, I remember, of course, in high school when kids are like, didn't understand a chemistry concept and then did. It's magical. But there is something about the just pure joy that elementary school kids have with school, and they're not weighed down by any of it. They're not weighed down by life. And you can't replace that energy. And you know, it was hard at the high school level and in adulthood, adult learners, is how much weight kids carry.
100% This goes back to your thought of the one house schoolhouse, where maybe we can find ways to imagine schools, students working with each other. So when you are in that kind of skewed area of high school, which it's part of, it's just natural, right, to fight back and whatever, push back. But to see that and work with students of that age throughout the year, I think schools that do that on a regular basis, not just a one day, you know, one time in October we do it, probably have some more success when you have to teach something to somebody else. So the substitute teaching, would you do it again?
Yeah, I would. And I plan to. It is a lot of work. Like, I mean, I had a great experience. I felt prepared, over-prepared, over-qualified. But the doing it to kind of give back and be part of the community and meet more people in the community, it's joyful. It's life-giving. And you can't, it's unfortunate that there is a price tag to it, of your time and energy and paperwork and money and all of that. But, you know, the people who do teach in schools, really, they're, of course, they're highly undervalued, but, and underpaid, of course, but they're magical people who really have hearts of gold that, you know, would choose this life and to be part of that work. 'Cause it's deep work and it's meaningful work. And education, I don't know why it gets a bad rap, because it's like, it's really helping develop young minds, spirits, souls, like, you know, and there's a lot of weight that should be carried there. And you know, in order to disrupt education, you have to understand that that's who you're working with. And it's kind of like how the power is limitless with what people can do and what youth can do. And especially with kids that are not burdened. And so, you know, especially if you want to work in schools or work with schools and do this, being around that energy is what's going to get you through whatever red tape there is. And that's the biggest takeaway. So the work that we're doing, you know, I think I'm glad that I took my break, and I'm still not like all like by any means back in the classroom with any kind of like regularity, but being part of that community is still really, really important. And I'm glad to kind of like get back into it, even in a subbing type role.
Love it. And that's a great final thought. And I really like how you eloquently put that, because this was an episode and we couldn't wait. I knew you were like going in and you're like, oh, just wait until you know what I had to do. But in the end, you know, nothing that is truly important comes easy. It should come a little easier, but nothing, it is a difficult thing to do. And I think, like, for those who go on that journey to sub and connect with their community, we'll start to see, hey, you know what, there are different opportunities in here. And what ifs, the answers of what if, and then the imagination can start. And I think, you know, it could generate a think tank. And I think every school should have a think tank, especially from substitute teachers. And because they're seeing things from both sides. And I think that to me would be something that I would end on here, because it's, you know, what if we had a think tank that met as part of the school day with some pretty good stakeholders of the community, and, you know, and then set aside this time to cut through some red tape. Perhaps we could get more subs. Perhaps we could solve other issues. So, my goodness, Allie, I love this. Thank you so much for walking us through that incredible path. I kind of want to walk into an elementary school kindergarten class. No, that was wonderful. And if anybody has like any different ways that you do, you know, substitute teaching, registering to become a teacher or a substitute teacher, or anybody in some school districts, I know it varies a lot. So leave us a message out there. But thank you again, Allie. And there's going to be more. I know there's going to be more substitute teaching.
More stories from the battlefields of education. I mean, it shouldn't feel that way, but sometimes right. It just is, because, you know, you have to dive in. Yeah. You always know what you're going to get.
100%, 100%. Well, thank you all for listening. Again, connect with us, leave a comment. If you've subbed, let us know, right? But for Allie Privett, I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thanks again for hanging out with us on the Disrupt Education Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privett.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college, campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.